The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections to order. I just found out that we have a major contract that was just settled, so I'm going to lay over House File 1218 until such time as there's a resolution of whether or not that contract should be inserted here. So with that, we will bring up House File 1011. We have a quorum, so Representative Poppy.
I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative Poppy moves the minutes to March 11th. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Hilty, a two-year bill, 1011. Where would you'll be making the motion? Where is this to go?
Mr. Chair, I believe it can go straight to the general register.
Is that your motion?
That would be my motion, that House File 1011 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
All right. That is the motion before it. Representative Hilty, please.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1011 is a bill that is brought to us by the Secretary of State's office. I think there is very little in the bill that does not either clarify or expedite some part of the election process, or a couple of perhaps more substantive changes. But basically, that is the bill that is intended to clarify a number of sections of statute, and also to expedite a number of processes. And I have with me this morning Beth Fraser from the Office of the Secretary of State, and if
it's a
desire, we can...
Do we need to put the amendment on, or is there... Is it, will that come later?
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. That is the A1 amendment is the author's amendment, and it does put the bill in the shape that we would like to have it considered. So it would probably be appropriate to move it at this time.
Why don't you move the amendment then?
Mr. Chair, I would move the amendment of the adoption of the 1011A1 amendment.
Members, it's in your packet. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing no discussion, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hilty or Ms. Fraser, two-year bill is amended. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. I will walk through the bill as quickly as possible, section by section. The first section of the bill is amended by the A1 amendment in response to concerns raised by the governor's office. So this amendment now makes it clear what we're trying to do, which is right now if an individual votes in a precinct in which they do not reside, we have to send them a violation notice. This almost always happens. The only time it happens is if somebody goes in to the polling place down the street and does same-day registration, and it turns out they were supposed to go to the polling place on the next block over, so right on the boundary of the precinct. They go to the wrong polling place. The election judge doesn't catch that they're one street over and should be in the other polling place. So they made an honest mistake. The election judge let them register, and then we're required to send them a violation notice, which often leads to calls to the county auditors. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. So instead of sending something called a violation notice, which causes stress and anxiety and additional phone calls, we'd like to clearly notify them that in the future they have to go to a different polling place, but only send a violation notice if this is a second offense or if they otherwise voted in a precinct in which they don't reside. Section 2 of the bill, 2 is similar also to Section 8 and 20 of the bill. And what these sections do is say that the statutory definition of signature is what counts for election-related materials. The statutory definition of signature has provisions in place to deal with people who have motor disabilities and can't necessarily sign on their own. They're allowed to make a mark or use a signature stamp. What this says is that somebody with power of attorney cannot otherwise sign an election-related document. So just because I have power of attorney for someone does not mean that I get to vote. I don't get to go in and vote absentee just because I have power of attorney for someone else.
Ms. Frazier, excuse me just 1 second. For anyone who is here for the first bill, that bill has been laid over. There's a major contract that has been ratified, so we're going to see if that contract can be inserted into the bill. So folks are waiting for that one. That's been laid over until that's resolved. Ms. Frazier, to this bill, if there are parts of this bill that we covered last session, could you elucidate for us which parts might they be, and then why they're returning to us in bill form? Were they, for instance, not passed, vetoed, what their status was in the last session? We have some members on the committee that were here last session. We have some who were not. So as a reminder to us of what parts we've seen before and hopefully we'll never see again should this bill prevail and then be signed. So, Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that there are... I believe there's only one section in the bill that appeared before, and that's the first section of the bill, which appeared in 07. We discussed it with the governor's office. We weren't able to come to agreement on the language, and so it did not come before the committee last year. And we have continued discussions, and I am hopeful they have not finally signed off on, but I'm hopeful that this language addresses the concerns that they have, and we will continue to be in discussion with them. I believe I'm meeting with them later this week to discuss it further.
Ms. Frazier, there were a number of items that we removed from bills, particularly in 08, because we knew they were under discussion. So that would be a good reminder to the committee of what those items were, and if resolution has been achieved, that would be excellent. So that would be helpful.
Yes,
Ms. Frazier.
Section 3 gives right now organizations that do voter registration drives have 10 calendar days to turn in the applications. This lengthens the period and gives them 10 business days. This provision did also appear in the 07 bill. I'm sorry, I was mistaken. But the governor's office has not raised concerns about this provision in discussion. Section 4 was raised in response to a problem that happened raised by the school district association. If municipalities change street names, they have to notify the county who has to update the voter records. And this changes to street names may not happen within 45 days before an election to be sure that all the records are up to date and that notices can get to voters. Sections 5 and 6, to a large extent, have to do with the implementation of the National Change of Address Automatic Updates that was passed last session. We are in the process of implementing this section, and as we've been working on the implementation, have found several clarifications that we think would be helpful. So, for example, on 3.29, if somebody moves from one county to another county and a notice was returned to indicate that someone moved to another county, the first county is required to notify the second county. We would prefer to have them transmit a copy of the mailing, so that the second county actually has a copy of the mailing itself. We want on 3.31 to prohibit, to generally allow counties to wait for the monthly update. So the way that this is going to work, I'll back up. We passed law last year that allows for the Secretary of State's office to run the voter registration database against a database of people who have filed permanent forwarding orders. to then use those address updates to update voter registration. So that will happen on at least a monthly basis. This section requires that if a non-forwardable mailing comes back with a notice that somebody has moved, that counties need to take action. Since they'll be getting at least a monthly notice electronically of people who have moved, if they receive a notice and there's not an election imminent, we would like them to be able to wait for the next electronic notice to see if that person's address is on the electronic notice, to save them the time and energy of having to manually type in these addresses. If there is an election imminent, then it's important that we get the records updated immediately. And so if there's an election in the next 47 days, they would be required to immediately update the records. If there is not, then they may wait for the next list of addresses to see whether they receive the data electronically. The language on 4.12 is a technical change about voters who the list says have moved out of state, or who they receive a notice back that indicates they've moved out of state, will be sent a notice saying that it appears that you're no longer eligible to vote in Minnesota, and therefore we will be removing you from the voter registration list, from the active list, within 21 days. The system will be programmed so that the counties can just queue these records. So technically they won't have to go in and do something again. So we're changing the language just to clarify that the status will be changed, but the county doesn't have to take a subsequent action to make that happen.
Okay. Your
question?
Yeah.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Frazier, is this going to affect people that go south, retirees or anybody that goes south for a few months and have a forwarding address for their mail? Are they going to get caught up in this so that I'm not changing my address, but I'm going to go down to Phoenix for November, December, and January? And if they get a mailing back, would this cause them to be dropped from the voter registration?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, it should not. On the forwarding order, you have to indicate whether it's a permanent or a temporary move, and we would only update people who indicate it is a permanent move. If they checked the wrong box and said that it was temporary or permanent, then they would get this notice at their address in Arizona or wherever, and then they would need to call. And the good thing about Minnesota is that if somebody didn't call and then came in to vote, we do have Election Day registration, so they could always do that if necessary. But there are safeguards in place to keep that from affecting those individuals. Section 6 makes a small change on 5.
Representative Kipmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just kind of waiting for the process. On number 414 under challenges, this non-forwardable mailing, could you tell me how the non-forwardable mailings work and how that whole process goes through?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kipmeyer, most election mailings are non-forwardable mailings, so the postal verification cards mailed after someone registers, for example, which are also sent if there's a change in the polling place, would be a non-forwardable mailing that would be covered by this section.
Mr. Chairman,
thank
you, Mr. Chairman. What happens to that non-forwardable postal verification card when it comes back? What happens to that piece of paper? And it is a piece of paper, it comes back and so on. What happens to it then? What's next? Can you just follow it all the way through a few more steps than what we're maybe just addressing here? I just want to get the bigger context.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kipmeyer, for the whole process or just subdivision 4?
Well, more for the whole process. What happens when this mailing comes back? It's undeliverable. They'll change the status to challenge. What happens to the actual piece of paper? I mean, most of the time you have a it just required to be kept for at least 22 months or some other thing. You know, what happens to it? Where is it filed and what happens to it?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Meyer, we're not changing the retention period, so it would still need to be retained for 22 months.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Meyer.
Is that retained by the county, by the Secretary of State, by the city? Who is retired to retain that for 22 months?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Meyer, it's retained by the county.
Representative Meyer.
And is that is that a public data? Is that publicly available?
Mr. Chair, Representative Meyer, yes. It is public data.
Ms. Frazier, I'm sorry, Representative Meyer, you have another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that, so any time you would find something in the statewide voter registration system and it has challenge, that would generally be that connection between starting with the system, the mailing going out, and coming back, so you've closed that whole loop by coming back, plus the piece of paper is retained for 22 months. That's kind of, that's why it comes all the way back to the voter registration system ultimately.
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, for challenges based upon residency. There are other challenges that aren't based upon a mailing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that.
Ms. Frazier, proceed.
Mr. Chair, Section 6 makes a small change on 5.4. Right now, there are two ways that we may note in the voter registration system that somebody has deceased and they're removed from the voter rolls. One is based upon reports from the Commissioner of Health. The second is if a registered voter within the same county sends a notice that the person has deceased. Now that we have a statewide system and that we will be potentially moving voters from one place to another, and there are times when a forwarding order is applied for because somebody has died and now you want all of their mail to go to their children's address, and their children might live in a different county, there might be a notice coming from a voter in a different county. So we just want to remove the restriction that it come from a registered voter within the same county. On 5.7 to 5.9, we are saying that the automatic update, the list may not be obtained within 47 days before a state primary or before a November general election. The reason for that is because we want to be sure that voters have time to make corrections needed prior to any election, since we're changing their addresses based upon these forwarding orders. The notices give voters 21 days to contact the auditor and let them know if there was a mistake made, if they didn't really change their residence, if they should continue to be registered at their previous address. The counties begin printing rosters right after the voter registration cutoff, which is 20 days before the election. So we want to leave a buffer of 47 days to ensure that there's time for the card to get to the voter, for the voter to have the full 21 days to respond, and then for the rosters to be printed to ensure that voters are on the appropriate roster. The changes in paragraph B relate to the addresses that we're getting from the vendor with the national change of address data, that we need to tell the county of the new address if we're able to precinct the data. If we can't find the data in our precinct finder, then we wouldn't know which county to notify. So in that case, we would not notify a county and would not be required to do so. The language on 514 and 515 has to do with timing and what comes first and what comes second. So if, for example, somebody filed a forwarding order but then submitted a voter registration at a different address, voter registration would take precedence over the forwarding order because the forwarding order was first. This is how we deal with multiple voter registrations that come in or a voter registration card that comes in and notice from DVS that somebody checked the box saying they wanted to be registered. So this is continuing that practice that whatever comes last is what is used. 517 to 520 deals with voters whose records are challenged. And we have struggled with this and trying to figure out how to deal with these voters, because on the one hand, we want to update their addresses. If they have moved, it doesn't make sense to keep them on a roster in a place where we have reason to believe that they no longer reside. If I were challenged and had moved from Minneapolis to St. Paul, it doesn't make sense to keep me on the roster in Minneapolis, because I would most likely go into the polling place in St. Paul, and then the election judges would not know that I was challenged. On the other hand, we don't want to notify, send a postcard to these voters telling them that we've changed their polling place, because that would imply to them that they were then eligible to vote, and we believe that they're not. So what this says is that the county will mail a notice to all voters except those who have challenges. So we would update their address, but they would not receive a notice that it had been updated. This will keep them on the right roster. Election judges will know that they are challenged if they come in to vote, and they'll have to go through the challenge procedure. And if they do go to the old polling place and are no longer challenged, they could always do election day registration. The changes on 5.27 and 5.28 are very similar to the changes on 5.14 and 5.15, having to do with what comes first, what comes second. The rest of the language in this paragraph mirrors the language in the previous paragraph. Section 7 relates to notice of precinct caucuses, and the statute requires that the parties notify the municipal clerk and county auditor of the precinct caucus locations. We worked with the political parties this past year to have them, in addition to notifying the clerks and county auditors, also provide us with electronic information. We provided a precinct caucus finder on our website, which received hundreds of thousands of hits and was very successful, and seemed to provide the information in a more centralized place and alleviated many calls to the clerks and auditors. So we would like to codify that practice and have the data come to us from the parties and caucuses. Section 8 is similar to Section 2, related to power of attorney. Section 9 requires candidates for federal, state, and county offices, write-in candidates, who currently have to file a request to have their write-in votes counted, that when they file the request, they would also pay a filing fee to have their votes counted. Section 10 sets the maximum size for a precinct at 3,500 voters as of March 1st of every even-numbered year. There are some precincts in the state that few, but some that have more than 6,600 voters. So we think there should be a limit on the size of precincts. This section does not become effective until after redistricting, so it wouldn't require changing any precincts immediately or incur any additional costs in the near future.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, what happens if a precinct subsequent to this does end up with more than 3,500? What happens then?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, if a precinct as of, you know, February of an even year had more than 3,500 voters, then they would need to look at creating a new precinct, at splitting it.
Representative Lanning.
Does that mean they'd have to change, the city would have to change the precinct lines immediately? And isn't that a problem?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, well, they would know that this was coming up, because it would be in statute that by March 1st of every even year that they would need to review this and make the changes necessary.
or Finland.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think making precinct boundary changes every year, every other year, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And you know what creates? I don't know if one of the reasons for this is because of the fact that you have so many people to process. But to me, more of a processing problem is the number of election day registrations. That's where the real hassle comes. I know of precincts where right now they have more than 3,500 registered voters and things go pretty smoothly. So I don't understand the reason for this, and I think it also would require local communities to change the boundaries on a regular basis, which I don't think is good for keeping the voters informed. When precincts get changed, people get confused about where they're supposed to vote, and I think this would add to the confusion. So I think this section should be taken out of the bill.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, this we have concerns about precincts being too large and too large to handle the voters that are there. But if the committee has concerns, we can take it out of the bill.
Representative Lanning, you're going to have a motion to that effect, and maybe Representative Hilty has a position on this. I'm not sure, but Representative Hilty, you want to respond?
Well. Mr. Chair, I don't know that I can add anything to what Ms. Frazier has said. My understanding about this provision in the first place was that there have been problems in some precincts because of the numbers. Since this is a process that is in place currently, I didn't really anticipate that it would be a problem in the way that Representative Lanning has described, but I don't think this is a critical feature to the bill in any case.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, who currently sets precinct size or determines the size of a precinct?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I believe the city does.
Mr. Chair, I would move Morrow. To remove this section of the bill then.
Is that a motion?
Yes, it is.
All right. Representative Morrow moves to. And I'm going to have Mr. Gehring make sure that this is correct. Mr. Gehring, can you tell us, are we just removing Section 10 from the bill?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's just delete Section 10.
So Representative Morrow moves the deletion of Section 10, which would be line 7.5 on page 7 through 8.4 on page 8. Mr. Gehring, is that correct?
Correct.
And could you make sure that that's written up and given to Mrs. Anderson so that could be in the minutes? All right. Does everyone understand the motion? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Sections 11 and 12 deal with municipal boundary adjustments. And since the bill has been introduced, we've been in conversation with Ms. Cotillo about the boundary adjustment procedures and annexations. And there is language in the author's amendment that adds to or replaces much of the language in the sections related to annexation and boundary adjustment. The issue that we're trying to address is that to the extent that land is annexed that has people on it, and luckily in most cases at this point it's usually vacant land, but to the extent that it is populated, if it happens within 20 days of an election, it can cause problems because at that point the rosters can be printed. And so you will be adding voters after the rosters have been printed. So we have worked with Ms. Cotillo on language for this and the other sections related to the annexation issues.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can you be a little bit more specific about connecting the amendment to this language? What is different? We have, you're in Section 11 and 12, and so under Section 12, there's brand new language, 823 to 830. Where in the amendment is the corresponding changes?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the language is changed on 1.22 of the amendment, and it clarifies that instead of, it adds the word regularly so that it's clear that these boundary adjustments may not happen before any regularly scheduled elections, which we would consider a state primary, a state general election, in the odd year, a municipal primary, a municipal general election, or a March township election.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Frazier. Would you also clarify Chapter 414?
Ms. Frazier.
The reference here is to Chapter 414.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I believe that's the chapter related to annexation.
Okay.
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry, Representative
Gallo. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other quick question. What's the significance of the 21 days? Can you help me understand that? Why isn't it 30 or 60? Why 21?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, the significance of 21 days is that 21 days is the cutoff for voter registration, and that after counties have finished entering their records, they can then print the rosters.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 13 sets a boundary for polling places in cities, saying that they have to be within the precinct or within 1 mile of the precinct. This, in a change several years ago, the limit for these type of precincts was lifted entirely. And so right now, it, a polling place in a city outside of the metro area could be anywhere. And so this is saying it has to be either within the precinct or within 1 mile of the precinct. Section 14 says that equipment bought with federal Help America Vote Act funds has to be, that it must be made available to other local jurisdictions holding standalone elections. The state law requires that almost all local elections use accessible voting equipment, and since the equipment was used with federal funds, we think it's appropriate that local jurisdictions let other local jurisdictions to use the equipment. The author's amendment adds that any funds received for use of the equipment have to be put into the jurisdiction's Help America Vote Act account, which is in accordance with the Election Assistance Commission, the federal oversight body's guidelines for the funds.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in a line in the Section 14, which is on 932 and 933, which says the chair must be provided for elderly voters and voters with disabilities to use while voting or waiting to vote. But we had these very long, I discovered a different situation in two precincts in my district. We had these very long lines that actually started at about 7 in the morning. And in my particular precinct, the chief election judge made sure that someone was periodically went out and looked at the line, and if there was anyone, obviously, like on crutches or something like that, immediately brought them into the front of the line. And there was another precinct where I said, suggested that they be doing that, and they just totally said, you know, we don't have the people and we don't have the time and the inclination to do it. But I wondered if we should have a stronger requirement than that. First of all, I don't know how you would provide a chair under those circumstances. Unless you bring the person in and allow, you know, it seems to me it's common sense that you ought not, and courtesy, that you ought to be able to do it in just kind of instructions to election judges rather than state law. But has anyone talked about this before in the case? I mean, obviously, since there's a line in Section 14, someone sort of thought about it, but has anyone thought about making that stronger?
Right. Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, I'm not aware of any discussions around making that sentence stronger.
Anyone who's been aware of problems of... I think there are anecdotal incidents of people complaining, and of course I don't even, not even sure if they're from this state or from where, of people standing on long lines that are having problems doing it. Well, I don't have an amendment to this one.
Well, Representative Khan, if you do, let's try to get it done in committee rather than later. Well, this is going to the floor.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 15 has to do with the volume of election laws that the Secretary of State's office has to provide to county auditors and municipal clerks. And it's always been a challenge to get it done by and printed by July 1st of every even-numbered year. And so in conversation with the local election officials, we have come up with this proposal that would require that we print it in the odd year and provide it electronically in the even year. Section 16 allows counties and cities to put a notice of their election, which is currently required to be posted in their office, allows them to either post it in their office or on their website.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
I'll defer to Representative Noble.
Representative Noble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to, and I may offer this as an amendment. Throughout this bill, what I've appreciated seeing is the fact that we are looking at trying to do things more electronically, which I think is obviously, using technology to our advantage is a good idea. But instead of or, could we do an and?
Ms. Frazier?
Would you see that as a friendly amendment, Representative Tilty?
Well, Representative Tilty.
Well, I was, Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I was not party to the discussions that led to this change, so perhaps that would be better addressed by Ms. Frazier, but I don't personally see any problem with posting a notice and notice on the website. I don't think that would be excessively burdensome for anyone.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, you may want to add language that says if they have a website. I'm not sure that all municipalities, which would include townships, have a website.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I think I agree with Representative Gottwald because I would hate to see someone who doesn't have internet access and if they're saying, well, walking into the office to see where it is posted and saying, well, it's posted on our website, well, I don't have web access, you're now denying me being able to look at it. So I think an and would be better there than an or.
Representative Gallon.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make an amendment or offer an amendment that would change on line 10.24, the word or would be changed to and. And if I'm following Ms. Frazier's recommendation on line 10.25, we would add, remove the period after site and add if one is available.
Let's have Mr. Gehring draft that.
Okay.
So make sure it works.
Sure, I think.
Representative
Hilton. If we're going to adopt that amendment, I think on line 23, we'd also have to strike either.
Yes, thank you. Let's see what Mr. Gehring comes up with. So, Mr. Gehring, you want to read Representative Dutwall's amendment, and then we're going to make this as a written amendment. It'll be given to Mrs. Anderson, so it appears in the minutes as a written amendment rather than a reference to an oral comment. Mr. Guerin.
Mr. Chair, if I heard the amendment correctly, line 10.23, delete the word either. Line 10.24, delete the word or and replace it with and. And then 10.25, before the period, insert comma if one is available.
Representative Hilke, is that acceptable?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes. And Ms. Frazier, I'm sorry, Representative Gallo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we'd also indicated that on line 10.23, the word either should be struck.
I believe.
I'm sorry.
I believe when he had, let's go through this one more time and everybody understand what we're going to do. So, Mr. Gang, let's go through Representative Gallo's amendment one more time, which is a written amendment.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, line 10.23, delete the word either and delete the word either. 10.24, delete the word or and replace it with and 10.25 before the period, insert comma if one is available.
And that amendment will be inserted into the minutes in that form as offered by Representative Gutwald. All right. Any further discussion to the Gutwald amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 17 is related to several other sections found later in the bill requiring the use of the election reporting system. This section specifically refers to state primary and state general elections requiring the county auditor to enter the offices and questions. The election reporting system is part of the statewide voter registration system and allows the results to be posted on our website. Entering the...
Excuse me, Representative Kahn and others, if you want to have a discussion, which is fine with me, let's not have it in committee. It is a distraction. We have just spent 43 minutes and we're on page 11. The bill is 29 pages long. So it would be a good idea if everyone stays focused on what we're doing and also give their attention to the presenter, just out of common courtesy. Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, so this section requires that county auditors enter the offices and questions during state primary and general elections of a list of the candidates and questions into the election reporting system. In conversation with the counties, they wanted this effective date, which requires the Secretary of State to certify that the system has been tested and allows for easy use of the system for the results to be used.
Representative Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Frazier. What is this certification, certified and certified to whom, and is it something you've done before, and is it available publicly?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, this effective date is based upon the effective dates used with the HAVA certification, and it is a public document. There is documentation that the system has been tested. The Secretary signs a statement to that effect, and it is public, just as the certification that you signed about the driver's license verification was.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Section 18 has to do with candidates with very similar names, and the current statute requires that if the surnames of two candidates are similar, so similar that it may cause confusion, that additional words may be added to the ballot to distinguish the two candidates. This adds language, and it was changed by the amendment to change it from identical first names to similar first names, so that it clarifies that if two candidates have very similar last names but different first names, that they're not entitled to additional descriptive words. It's only in the case where both their first and their last names are similar. Section 19.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fraser, aren't you a little concerned that by not putting in any restriction in there, that what they use, those three words, could be just about anything? Like, we could have Tim Sanders the Great, or or the Best. I mean, shouldn't there be some further clarification as to what you're trying to use as a distinguishing?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we're not changing that part of the statute. That's the existing language, and 1114 does indicate that it would need to indicate the candidate's occupation, office, residence, or any combination. So there are some restrictions. This language would actually further restrict when descriptive words could be put on the ballot, because it would be limited to cases where the first names were similar, not just the last names.
Representative Lanny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would this be interpreted that if Jay Johnson ran against Jay Johnson, and the first Jay Johnson was an incumbent, he could put incumbent on the ballot?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, perhaps. Again, that's the existing law, not anything that we're changing.
Maybe we should change existing law.
Ms. Fraser, you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, Section 19 makes a change on page 12. Right now it says that voter registration applications may be inspected, but only after they have been entered into the statewide voter registration system. This language would remove that qualifier, just saying that voter registration applications may not be inspected.
Representative Gutwald, I think, has a question here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fraser, I'm just wondering why. Why are we doing that? Why can't they be inspected?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gutwald, the rationale is that all of the data, with one exception, is from the card, is entered into the system. That the system is computerized, it's much easier to retrieve data from the system, to redact the private data. The only exception is the person's signature, which is on the card and is not in the system. So when people come and ask for information, it's just much easier, much simpler, and less time-consuming and less costly for counties to pull the data out of the system, as opposed to having to go and retrieve the actual card, cover up the private information.
Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fraser, my concern, it's a genuine one. I'm not trying to play games with you here at all, but as we've seen certainly with this Senate situation, and I'm sure in other recounts, it's nice to be able to double check things, that if something goes wrong with the system, that you're able to go back and look at something else. This line, as I'm reading it, says no voter registration application may be inspected, period. But there's no opportunity to do that. So maybe you can correct me or set my thinking right on that, or answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I think that in the course of a contest, that a court could order that they be inspected.
Representative Flair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I really have concerns about this, too. It's so specific, because previously you testified that the voter registration application or postal verification cards and some of those kinds of documents are public documents. But here, contrary to public data, it's stating no may be inspected. So it's a little bit of a contradiction there. But before we go into that, I would also ask the question about when are these voter registration applications, it says they may be inspected, but you know, they have to be entered in the system. Are they all entered into the system as of today?
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kismar, I'm not sure if they're all entered. I believe that almost all of them are. I know that as of late last week, there were still a handful of counties that were not done entering the Election Day registration information.
Thank you, Kismar.
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms. Frazier, doesn't the Help America Vote Act law specifically state that when you receive the voter registration application, it shall immediately be entered into the state voter registration system? It seems, let's see, November, December, January, February, here we are into March, nearly 5 months. I think, aren't we beyond immediately? And doesn't it really infringe upon what is considered public data, and especially this additional restriction that this would be totally unavailable for 5-6 months after an election day? And isn't that a violation of a Help America Vote Act?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't believe it is a violation of the Help America Vote Act. The counties have been processing the applications as quickly as they can. They know it's important to get the data into the system, and they just have not finished yet. It's not that they've been lollygagging or ignoring this task.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Frazier, I have absolutely no doubt. I know that they put in many, many, many long hours doing this, but the mere fact of it is right now that we don't even know the names of the people that voted in the election last November because their voter registration application has not yet been entered into the system. And the Help America Vote Act says immediately. I do not think by any means, no matter how hard they work, I think we need to give some assistance to them, come up with some tools for them, do something. But, you know, nowhere does 5 months come close to immediately. And I think this is a real critical importance, and it seems as though that you don't enter it for 5-6 months, and then you say, but it's not available to even be looked at, and you've got 5-6 months. That seems to me a real problem, a real issue, and we really need to work on that. And, you know, we've used electronics every other place, then why not here? Take advantage of that and save some of this burden to the counties by making use of technology in the polling place on election day, where you are able to scan driver's license cards. You're able to integrate that with a state voter registration system and save people, make things more transparent, more available, comply with the Help America Vote Act with immediately, and save some of the burden from these counties. It seems like you've used technology in every other place. Is there something going to come forward that's going to deal with that? Because this really is an issue, and when you're further restricting it and tying people in when you don't enter it for 5 months, this is really kind of a problem that really needs to be dealt with. Do you have anything in the works, or are you aware of this issue or problem and working to resolve that area?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't think that this changes this in a way that you're describing, because current law prohibits the cards from being inspected until they're entered. So they can't be looked at until they're entered anyway. So they couldn't be looked at during this period anyway. That this would not change that. This only changes whether they can be inspected after they've been entered, after the data is available electronically and can be easily pulled out.
Representative
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just don't understand why that's a big problem. It seems to me that, and again, I want to say that some of this may be one side of an issue in regards to timing and some of that, but I think the bigger issue here is the fact that it's 5-6 months after an election day, and that data is still not entered, and now you're going to restrict access to it until it is entered, and you've still got the same issue. But I also think begs the fact that the real problem is we have a system that the Help America Vote Act says immediately, 5-6 months is nowhere immediately. I know they work hard. Let's help them, and let's focus less on the end of it and focus on the point at the time on election day when all those documents, voter registration applications and rosters and all these things are done. Let's get that work done more quickly, save the county, save labor, save time, Because going 5-6 months, we're at risk of a potential lawsuit by not doing this. At some point, immediately, the patience with immediately and being patient with all that will become an issue. Let's take care of it now. And certainly we have this election legislative session right now. This is a year and a half before an election day, another major one. Let's focus on some of that. But it concerns me when I see more restrictions and more tie-ups and a lack of focus on when the data is entered and that kind of compliance and using technology. That's why that's a concern to me. That dichotomy and conflict are an issue. But I want to focus less on the end of it and focus more on getting it entered more quickly, more soon, so this becomes less of an issue because it will be entered more immediately and more in compliance.
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, we are big supporters of increased funds to the county election offices so that they have the staff to input this data more quickly.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I think that use of technology would mean that you would have things in the polling place on election day. You have a card swipe, and it would do the data entry, and it would be done while you already have paid staff people there. This is a system that is readily available, and I believe the counties would welcome being able to not have to hire people for months afterwards and instead focus those same resources, just a reallocation of funds. Instead of after, months after, you reallocate those funds and you use them in a better way. Have you looked at, I mean, I know that we had a system that was demonstrated to the Secretary of State Office and to the counties back in 2005-2006, and so I know the technology is there, it is capable, and I think the savings would be better used to be focused in that way. Have you reviewed that? Have you looked at that or looked into that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, we are looking at electronic poll books and other tools that the counties could use to make their jobs easier and provide more convenience at the polling place.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, you said as of last week a handful of counties. Out of the 87 counties, what constitutes a handful?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I don't have the information in front of me.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Frazier, could you get that to us? I'd like to know as of right now, after listening to the questioning by Representative Kiffmeyer, how many counties have not complied?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I'd be happy to get you the information.
Representative Gutwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I've been listening to this this questioning back and forth, I'd like to make a motion to reinsert the stricken language.
All right,
appreciate it, Representative Morrow.
Let's just slow up here a second. So are we on page 12?
You're on page 12, line 12.
And you want to reinsert the stricken language on lines 12.7 and 12.8?
Correct.
And that's your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Hill.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all,
I thank you.
Representative Gottwald wanted to pursue that track that what he would want to do is just delete Section 19. And before we do that, Mr. Chair, I would like to just reiterate what Ms. Frazier said now some time ago, which is that under current law, which is what we're looking at here, if we reinstate that language, no voter registration application may be inspected until the information has been entered in the statewide system. Anyway, so once it is entered into the statewide system, and what Representative Kiffmeyer was talking about, I believe, is the rate at which that is possible. But once it is in the system, that information is available anyway. The intention of this, just to get back to the original discussion, was simply to make the availability of this information less burdensome on county officials.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To my amendment, my question that I asked initially, I don't think was answered in a way that would make me not want to do this, and that is that if something is wrong with the system or some question is raised about the registration as it is entered into the system, this language would prohibit you from ever going back and double-checking that. And that to me is somewhat troublesome. I understand what you're trying to do here, but I also don't see any problem with leaving the language as it is and allowing for that in such a case. Relying exclusively on electronic systems, I have concerns about. It's great that we're moving to them, but I think there's always some benefit in being able to double check things or inspect an actual registration. So I appreciate the Representative Hilty's suggestion, and Mr. Chair, that would be my motion, is to delete that section 9.
Why don't you then withdraw your first motion?
I'll withdraw my first motion.
And then,
Chair,
your motion is now to delete section 19?
Yes.
All right, so the motion before us now is to delete section 19, which is on pages 11 and 12. Representative Dixon, to the motion.
To the motion, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask members of this committee to support the motion, and for one simple reason, and Representative Gottwald started on it, even with the very best of intentions, people keying data into an electronic system sometimes make errors. Not intentionally, but it sometimes happens. This language would prevent any cross-check back to the written documentation.
Representative Merle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I haven't said how I'd vote on this amendment. The language I would have suggested was no voter registration application may be inspected unless upon a court order. Try to find a middle ground between an open-ended show me the registration card and the very concerns I think the Representative Diskins and you are offering. So I am offering a middle ground to consider.
All right, the motion before us is the Gottwald motion to delete section 19. Any further discussion to that motion? Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, I don't object to the Gottwald amendment.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 20 is similar to sections 2 and 8 related to power of attorney. Section 21 has to do with the distance that individuals can be from the polling place. The language was passed last year requiring that individuals be at least 100 feet from the polling place, to standardize it with the distance that individuals on private property had to be for campaigning. So there would only be one boundary that election judges had to worry about. A conglomeration of media companies then sued, saying that they wanted to be able to conduct exit polling and that being 100 feet from the building was too far. And that case is still out there. The court is waiting to see if the legislature takes action to address their concerns. So the language on 12.22 to 12.24 is basically from the court order defining exit polling. And so this section allows individuals who are representatives of the press or academic institutions who are conducting exit polling to be within 100 feet of the polling place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, do you have a letter from the court or somebody that's saying they're specifically waiting for us to rule on the or to determine whether or not we're going to change this? Where's that coming from?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I can get you documentation from the case. They decided to postpone. There was a temporary restraining order for the November election, and then they decided to postpone any further action until after the legislative session to see whether the legislature took action.
Mr.
Representative Emmer.
Okay, and that's my understanding with respect to the press, right?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, it's the press that brought the case.
Mr. Chair, I take that, Ms. Fraser, that's a yes, and I'm wondering why you've included academic institution then.
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we did that in response to requests from some academic institutions, including a professor at Southwest State University who works with students to conduct exit polls outside the polling place.
Representative Gumball.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fraser, I'm just wondering, as I'm thinking this through, how do you police this? Are there credentials? So somebody's in there doing, questioning people or talking to people in line. How do you know whether they're from an academic institution or they're there conducting actual exit polling? It says that exit polling is defined as approaching voters in a predetermined pattern. So is that pattern then submitted for approval? I'm trying to think practically, how do you police this? Because I know there have been concerns about who's near voters and what they're doing, and I think I get what you're trying to do here, but I am wondering practically how you make this work.
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, the definition of exit polling basically requires or only allows exit pollsters to approach someone and ask them to fill out a questionnaire. So if somebody is talking to voters more than saying, would you be willing to participate in my survey, then you have an indication that they're not in compliance with this section.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer.
Ms. Fraser, but it still, how do you know who these people are? How do they identify themselves? Are you going to require the precincts to provide election judges to police this? How are we going to know if there's no line, no definitive line, and there's no express statement as to how they identify themselves? I mean, could somebody just set up a blog and call themselves press and then start to conduct surveys?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer. The media company that did the exit polling before did set up a table. They wore badges. They did things like that. We could add additional language if you're interested. We're just trying to take action so that the court case can be settled.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Fraser, thank you. I will talk to you about it after because I do have concerns about it. It was put in for a reason, and there are issues with it as it was enacted. I'm afraid that the fix might actually completely undo the purpose of the original change. So I'd love to talk to you about it after. Thanks.
Ms. Fraser, Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My only concern about what Representative Emmer just brought up is that this, I think you had stated earlier, this bill is going directly to the floor, correct?
Representative Gottwald, and that's my concern, too, that if we're going to do this bill, we are going to get it right in committee first.
Thank you.
And we're on page 12, and there are 17 pages to go, and we have 20 minutes. So I think we all know what's going to happen. Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 22 makes some changes to the Voters' Bill of Rights, which has to be posted in polling places on Election Day. It adds some language to number one, informing people that they have the right to be absent from work on the morning of Election Day, and adds that without reduction to your pay, personal leave, or vacation time. This is not changing that. This is just adding that language to the Voters' Bill of Rights.
Ms. Fraser, I know of at least one other bill that makes a change in another place to the Voters' Bill of Rights. Am I to understand then that this is what the Secretary of State supports and the other bills you do not? Or how are we to understand the other bills that are making changes to the Voters' Bill of Rights?
Mr. Chair, I would need to see the exact language to answer that.
Well, it's unlikely we are going to complete this bill today. So my suggestion would be, on those other bills, that you take a look at them, and when we bring this bill back up, that if the Secretary of State, if that's part of the changes you wish to support, that they be incorporated here, rather than we have to go through yet another bill in exactly the same section of law. So that would be helpful. Thank
okay.
you.
I will do that, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
On paragraph 2, we're taking out between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. because there are some polling places in small jurisdictions in greater Minnesota that don't open until 10 a.m. And so this implies that all polling places open at 7. Section 23.
I'm sorry, Rev. Kiffmeyer had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do appreciate the fact that there are those and that we will have the opportunity to do that. I did just want to interject on this particular issue, though, to point out that the morning of Election Day, there are many people who work nights, they work evenings, they work, you know, other kinds of hours. I just want to be sure that we maybe just want to make a suggestion. I can work with you on that, that we take a look at some of the phrasing of that. And I just wanted to put that on the record while we're at it. Thank you.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Section 23 deals with the ability to open up the ballot box during Election Day. The rules currently allow ballot boxes to be opened once during Election Day between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. To straighten the ballots or remove ballots so that they don't become overfull. The cities have said that that's too restrictive, that they may need to open the ballot boxes more than once, and so this language allows them to do that with the same protections in place that are found in the rules to election judges of different parties. The ballots have to be secured, etc. Section 24 specifically allows voters to use another writing surface to mark their ballot. So, for example, a clipboard. This may have been done in the past election. It's not clearly authorized by statute, so we are authorizing that. Section 25 was deleted in the author's amendment. Section 26 was modified in the author's amendment to specify that voters may not take a picture of their ballot, and that if they do, it's basically the same as having shown their ballot to somebody, and that then they lose the opportunity to vote. Section 27 is related to the other sections on the election reporting system, and this requires county auditors to enter the vote for state primary and state general elections into the system so that they're available on our website. Section 28 removes the requirement that the canvas report include the names of all the write-in candidates who requested to have their votes tallied, and instead that this should be included on a separate report. It also allows the... It also... changes that two copies have to be sent to our office instead only one copy, and that it may be sent by messenger. Section 29 also reduces the number of copies of the canvassing reports have to be sent to our office from 2 to 1. Section 30 adds that the bond for printers only has to be provided if the official requests it. Section 31 relates to the primary sample ballot, and right now the statute requires that they be in alphabetical order on the sample ballot. This instead requires that they be in the first rotation order, which is the same as for the general election. The candidates' names have to be in first rotation order. Section 32 relates to a special election for U.S. Senate if there's a vacancy in office. Right now, the statute requires that a primary, if it's held in the odd year, be held in October, and this would change that to September on the date that we normally hold a primary. The author's amendment added some additional language that goes along with this that changes some other sections of this statute, bringing them into line with timing used around elections that's needed to program the equipment. So on the amendment, that's found on page 2 of the author's amendment, changing the timing for filing for office on lines 2.5 to 2.29. Section 33 brings us into compliance with a federal law that was passed several years ago having to do with tragic situation in which more than 100 members of the United States House of Representatives have to be replaced. We are hoping that we never have to use this section of statute, but under federal law we need to have provisions in place were this to happen. So the language here provides for the timing that of when the election has to happen. The vacancy for the election can't happen later than 49 days after the U.S. Speaker declares the vacancy unless there's a regularly scheduled election within 75 days. The subdivision 3 relates to parties nominating candidates. The author's amendment removed on 18.27 the word major. So any political party would be allowed to nominate a candidate. We had a meeting with the chairs of all of the political parties and discussed this section in particular. And there was concern on the minor party's part that if there were a situation where more than 100 members of Congress had to be replaced, that there would not be time to circulate petitions. They said, let's get rid of the word major, let any party nominate a candidate. And the major party representatives in the room kind of shrugged and said, okay. And again, everyone hopes this will never happen.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fraser, is there anything in Section 33, and the reason I ask is you just said major was taken out. Is there anything in Section 33 that's either an addition or does not include something from the federal law that you're referring to?
Ms. Fraser.
Representative Emmer, I can share the federal statute with you. All of the timing is specified in the federal law for nominating the candidates, for having the special election.
We'll get that after. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Subdivision 5 was also required by the federal law, which is different than the way that we do elections at any other time, in that it requires that ballots from overseas and military voters be accepted after the election. Section 34 is a change requiring that cities that are going to adopt a resolution to hold a primary, that they must do it at least 6 months before the next general election. Doing it 3 months before the next general election is too late to hold a primary for that election. Section 35 and 36 specify that candidates filing to fill the remainder of a vacant city office must file affidavits of candidacy, and the municipality must publish a notice about the opportunity to file for this office. Section 37, again, has to do with the election reporting system and requiring that for municipal elections in even years, the municipal clerk provide the list of candidates and questions to the county auditor to be entered upon mutual agreement, the county auditor and municipal clerk may agree to have the municipal clerk enter the information. In the odd-numbered year, it makes it optional that if the municipal clerk and county auditor agree that they want to have the information entered into the election reporting system so that it's then the results are then available on our website, that this allows them to do that.
Representative Goldwell.
Just a very quick question, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fraser, I've seen this language in a couple of places, and I'm just trying to understand, how long would it take for the Secretary of State to do this certification process? It's kind of a, you know, they want to do a double check, make sure they're doing it right before the section becomes applicable. Is this a quick thing, or is there a chance that there'd be undue delays, or?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I don't believe that there will be undue delays. That this is language that the counties and cities wanted put in. They just wanted to be sure that everything was set before this was required.
Ms. Fraser.
Section 38, 39, and 45 all go together and standardize the timing so that county auditors, city clerks, and school district clerks must all make their sample ballots available for public inspection at least 2 weeks before the election. Section 40, again, relates to the election reporting system, and this is the second half of the section related to entering the results. The first half had to do with entering the candidates.
President Kiffmeyer.
I saw another hand, Mr. Chairman. I'll defer.
Representative. Mr. Chair, Ms. Fraser, is there a reason why we don't want it posted beforehand?
Ms. Fraser.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Fraser, Section 39. Involves preparing a sample ballot. If I read it right, it used to require, and I know that we have it posted on the door, you know, of City Hall, for instance, prior to the election. This would not require that it be posted until Election Day, or did I read it wrong? And I'm just wondering why you wouldn't post it.
Ms. Fraser.
Yeah, preparing post.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, it does say make them available for public inspection. So,
Representative Emmer, Mr. Chair, Ms. Fraser, I understand, but people don't typically, you know, out of sight, out of mind. The folks I know are just going in and they're getting their driver license renewal, they're getting their tabs, their snowmobile things. They're not necessarily going to stop by the administration desk and say, "Can I see a sample ballot?" And that's why I think we had it posted ahead of time, because people just as incident to coming and going would see the ballot, and if there's a mistake, then we would expect they would tell somebody. But, Mr. Chair, that's why I'm asking, why wouldn't we just post it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, that would be a fine.
Okay, we can talk about it after. I was just asking if there's a reason why we're changing it.
Representative Gottwald, did you have a question? Ms. Fraser.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Section 41 clarifies that school districts do not have to hold primaries if fewer than twice the number of candidates file for office. Section 42 relates to school district transitions and for the most part is codifying session law from 1994, allowing school districts to change from an odd year to an even year and an even year to an odd year. The second paragraph in each of these subdivisions was deleted in the author's amendment, and additional language was added to the first paragraph.
Mr. Chair,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
And going back to Section 40, the election results reporting, I just want to clarify again that on line 21-17, says if a county auditor has notified of intent to use, does the county auditor decide whether they're going to use the election reporting system for municipal, or is this a choice of the city and the township? Because many times these elections are not necessarily for a county office, because they're done usually on a general election, but the cities and townships are often in those sequence. So who decides, the county, the city, or township, of using the election reporting system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I would direct you back to Section 37, which is kind of the first half of this is a two-part thing. And in Section 37, the candidates and the offices and questions are entered into the system. And that's where it says that the municipal clerk and the county auditor may mutually decide to use the system. So Section 40 only comes into effect if they have mutually decided under 37 to use the system.
Okay, that clarifies it. Thank you.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, so the author's amendment amended this section of the bill, and
Ms. Frazier, are we in Section 42 still? Or
42, all right. Yes. So it does that on the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 of the author's amendment. So I guess it replaces this section entirely. I'm sorry. So it continues to codify the 94 session law and clarifies that on 3.2 of the author's amendment that a one-year extension of each board member, that's one way to do this orderly transition. That has been the practice. So it's just putting into the statute the codification and that this is the one option that may be used for switching from odd to even and even to odd.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. You're on Section 42, and you're saying there's a change in the author's amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, Section 42 in the author's amendment there's new language in the author's amendment replacing the language in the bill for Section 42.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I might be missing something, but I'm seeing Section 35, and I'm just going down to try and find Section, and then it jumps to Section 58. So I'm just...
Are you looking at, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, are you looking at the author's amendment?
H1011A1?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you look at the author's amendment,
yes.
It starts on 3.32. This is the new language. 2.32.
Okay. Members, let's let Ms. Frazier handle it, or Mr. Gehring, and while I appreciate assistance by just having people talk out loud, it is a distraction, and let's allow those folks who are actually testifying or staff to work on this. Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So 2.31 deletes the language of this section, other than the title, and then new language is found on 2.32. And onto the following page through 3.12.
All right, members. We're going to continue this bill on Tuesday. Now, if everyone would listen, if you have an amendment, I want you to do two things. Get it drafted properly and talk to the Secretary of State's office on the amendment so we're sure that, first of all, they understand it, so we can understand. That is what we are going to do on Tuesday. This will be the first bill up. We only have five pages left. We'll handle the amendments then, and if you have a question on the author's amendment, we'll settle that also on Tuesday. And with that, meeting is adjourned.